Welcome to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. This is a show for listeners wanting to learn more about the ins and outs of the private securities brokerage landscape. Each episode will feature insightful conversations with the world's leading investment bankers, placement agents, capital providers, startup CEOs, and more. And with that, let's get into the show. Kyril Assiter, thanks so much for joining us here on Pencils Down.
Thanks so much for having me.
I usually start by asking our guests to share a little bit about their backgrounds and their paths through and into investment banking. I know you spent 8 years before starting CenterFin as a senior analyst and then a VP at Goldman Sachs. What was the story there that led you to found CenterFin and being involved with a couple of other boutiques, most recently Sofron Advisors? I'd be very curious to learn a little bit more about kind of what that transition through investment banking and now into the startup world has been like for you.
Yeah, sure. Happy to discuss. So I probably had a not very common kind of path to where I am today. I started at Goldman actually right out of undergrad. I started out in the training program in the operations division, which is basically the kind of the nuts and bolts that support the sales and trading divisions effectively. I started out in foreign exchange. I went to the equities division. At some point, I became fairly convinced that the hedge fund industry was where I wanted to spend the bulk of my career. This is early 2000s. The hedge fund industry at the time was just starting to get going, just becoming institutionalized, as they say. And so I wanted to really try and focus on aligning myself with that industry. All the smartest people that I knew of were starting hedge funds or going to work at hedge funds. So I actually joined the prime brokerage business fairly early on in my career. And the prime brokerage business at Goldman was the business that catered to the hedge fund industry, effectively providing them with all of the services they needed to get off the ground and grow and operate. That led me, after about 8 years, as you say, that led me actually to get hired by one of my clients, a distressed credit hedge fund that was founded by 2X Goldman Sachs proprietary investors. I had covered them for a number of years. At some point, they decided to bring me on board. I was there for 5 or 6 years. I got recruited to Golub Capital at some point, which is a big middle market lending firm. They had a liquid credit business that they were focused on. And so, they recruited me to head up the operations for that. So I was there for about a year and a half before I started Sofron Advisors, and that was really kind of my my first foray into being an independent kind of boutique oriented banking slash placement agent. And really the thought there was I'd been in the business long enough at that point, probably 15 years, fair amount of experience, a fair amount of connectivity in the institutional investor landscape. And I really felt like I can utilize what I've learned and my network to help bridge the gap, as I described, between opportunities and capital. And so for a number of years, I worked on things, you know, pretty interesting projects, including traditional alternative investment funds that I was very comfortable with, but also things like, you know, a shipping operator that wanted to raise some capital to build a fleet of tankers, somebody who bought and monetized intellectual property portfolios where I helped introduce them to potential sources of financing. Really interesting stuff. You know, somebody who also bought charged off debt, where that was a very interesting kind of consumer oriented opportunity that I worked on. And eventually, I started what is now CenterFin, and the path there was really organic. You know, 2 decades working on Wall Street at this point, never really had a good option to send friends and family to when it came to, you know, advice on managing their money. I really felt like, you know, everything that was out there was either not good enough and overpriced or both. And so I decided to build something that was modeled after institutional investors, sophisticated investors that I've been interacting with my whole career. And that's what got me to start CenterFin about 2 years ago.
No, thanks so much for telling that story. I mean, I think I have so many questions there about kind of the arc of your career from Goldman into Golub into Sofron and now into CenterFin. But just to dive a little deeper into CenterFin itself, its investment approach, as far as I can tell, to modern wealth management is in using a mix of passive, active, and alternative strategies. Or how does CenterFin's approach differ, in your view, from a more orthodox approach to wealth management? And how has that strategy resulted in a more successful experience for your clients?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the thing that I saw lacking when I looked at options that were available to individuals was, you know, the approach that you referred to, which is using a mix of different strategies and asset classes rather than just a handful. So most options that are available to individuals out there, as you're probably familiar with, are a combination of stocks and bonds, right? So, and it's generally these days a combination of ETFs that represent stocks and bonds. And you can do it, you know, via a fairly cheap option like a robo-advisor where, you know, it's kind of automatically rebalanced for you and they charge you a fairly low fee. Or, you know, you pretty much get the same thing at a full service financial advisor where you're getting the same investment product, but you're getting a human being that you can talk to and you're paying, you know, multiples of what you're paying for a robo advisor. And so what I wanted to do was build something that had a better investment solution, you know, than the robo advisor, meaning a different mix of than just stocks and bonds. So stocks, bonds, commodities, and alternative investment strategies. And the ability to actually speak to a human being if you wanted to, which is not something that's available for most robo-advisors, but that is available for traditional financial advisors. So it's really kind of a hybrid approach. And we literally learned, what to build by talking to our clients. And so when we started to talk to people about what is now Centerfin, we asked them about pain points. What do they want? What do they like? What do they not like? And we basically built something to reflect all of that data that we gathered.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think in many ways, it reflects kind of a natural evolution of this space, moving from totally automated, one size fits all, into much more of a hybrid between the human and the tech. At Finalis, we refer to that as human in the loop technology. I'm curious to learn a little bit more about how you have threaded that needle in combining that human experience with technology and providing this customized approach to wealth management. Tell us a little bit about how you've been able to achieve that and what types of advantages, you know, that human in the loop technology unlocks for your clients.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's kind of more of the art than the science, right? So I think first and foremost, what that means is not being, from a kind of solicitation perspective, not being the traditional financial advisor. You know, they get a lead and they just like call you and call you and call you and call you and call you until you pick up the phone and you know, hopefully, you give them an audience. That's not something we wanted to do. We wanted to be able to attract our clients. You know, they sought us out because somebody else talked about it or a person in their community that they respect, you know, had learned about what we do and why it's better and why it's different and referred them to us. And so that's generally how we've generated leads since we started to actually onboard clients at the beginning of this year. And the human element really comes as a resource for them where, you know, while we deliver our service digitally, so we have an app that you use to be able to onboard and utilize our service, we have an ability for the client to actually get in contact with somebody on our team. And so today that means one of our three kind of investment committee members. So myself, our CIO and CFO. Eventually, you know, we'll obviously broaden the team to have more resources available. But really the goal is to be able to answer questions as they come up in these volatile markets. As I'm sure you're aware, more communication is better than less. And so we do a fair amount of proactive communication via email and through our app to make sure that clients understand what is going on and our thoughts about it, what if anything we're doing about it. To your point, it's an evolution of what's existed for decades into something that we think makes sense for the future generations.
You know, it's fascinating. And you know, one of the things that we think about a lot internally at Finalis is, you know, there's really two objectives to the human in the loop. One is obviously deliver an outstanding experience to our clients. In our case, our clients are investment banks. But internally, we're also focused on making sure that we can scale our offering, our human in the loop offering, in a way that approximates the types of margins that a traditional software company might see, right? Where they become software-like margins at scale. And it really raises the bar with respect to how these workflows are built into the platform itself so that it's much more of an exception-based management. You can imagine this almost as a massive decision tree, right? Where these workflows have been thought through and we understand all of the various scenarios that can emerge. But it's absolutely fascinating. And you're right. It is very much an art as opposed to a science because those workflows and that automation is ultimately the function of judgment calls at each and every stage of that decision tree, right? With respect to where in that decision tree a given process is going to go. And we are kind of working our way through that in real time. So it's absolutely fascinating. One of the fundamental missions that we have here at Finalis is to democratize access to the private capital markets. And one of the things that I noticed on your website is that, you know, Centerfin's mission is to shift the balance of power from Wall Street to Main Street. Clearly, we share the same ethos. Share a little bit about what the thinking or philosophy is behind Centerfin's mission and what motivates you in this audacious attempt to reshape the private capital markets on these terms.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, and it is very much a kind of a core part of our ethos. And the way that and the reason why we say this is, I think about our capital markets, and you know, when you kind of simplify everything down to the bare basics, right? You have, in a capitalist society like the United States, you have private businesses that need access to capital in order to be able to provide whatever goods and services they need to provide. That capital, the capital stock, is effectively largely owned by us, right? It's our savings, whether it be in a pension fund or, you know, in a retirement account, or, you know, we might have donated our, you know, some of our savings to an endowment for a, you know, our alma mater, right? But at the end of the day, all of that capital comes from us. And Wall Street is just kind of a machine that sits on top of that capital base and facilitates the flow. And as you know, and probably one of the main driving reasons why you started Finalis, and I totally agree with what you guys are doing, you can do it in a much more efficient fashion. And you can utilize technology for that. And that's very much why I think right now is a point in time where you can do this, where what you guys are doing makes sense and I think will be successful, where what we are doing I think makes sense and will be successful, is because we are embracing for the first time the efficient use of technology in order to make things better, simpler, cheaper for the client, right? At the end of the day, it's all about the client. And I think it's impossible, almost impossible, to do this inside a legacy incumbent institution. And I have all the respect in the world for all the big banks, including the one I came from, but it's just the nature of the beast is such that you can't sit in an organization that has a history that dates back, you know, centuries in the case of some of these institutions, and really innovate the way that you can as a de novo startup that is just, you know, has a blank sheet of paper. So that's why I think that we're living in a time where the institutions that are founded today, hopefully yours and mine, will be the basis for the next generation of financial services that will just have a slightly different approach to how they deliver value. And I really think it's about delivering value instead of extracting value. And I think that that's really the difference in mindset that we bring to the table.
I love that. I wanted to ask you a little bit about timing. You know, timing is everything in the life of a startup, as you know. You know, I think one of the famous examples of missed timing is the Apple Newton, right? Which is, you know, it probably came out 10 years before the BlackBerry at least. And so it was great product, wrong time. I guess on a personal level, what gave you the gumption to think, now's the time for me professionally to take this leap? But then in terms of Centerfin specifically, what gave you the conviction that now was the time for a business like Centerfin?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's a difficult question. But I would say, to answer the former part of the question, what gave me personally the confidence to start this was really I think going back throughout my personal and professional experience, one of the things that I've recognized and as a pattern is the ability to spot certain larger kind of trends. This was, you know, early days in college where, you know, I was an early internet adopter and all throughout my you know, adult life, you know, just kind of spotting things and kind of calling them out, I'm never really doing anything about it. And I said to myself that before it's too late, at some point when I recognize something, that I feel like is a really big trend that could be capitalized on, I'm going to have to do it. And so, you know, just kind of given where I am in my life, professionally, personally, my family, it felt like the right time to do this. And to answer your second part of your question, why Centerfin and specifically what we're doing, I think it's actually a really good time because the markets are conducive in this current environment to our approach more so than they have been in the past, you know, decade plus. I was actually just discussing with a colleague before this that, you know, not to get too much into the weeds about markets, but, you know, we've been living in a fairly singular kind of easy monetary environment since the financial crisis. And that's just meant that, you know, from an investment perspective and from kind of a money management perspective, you're probably best off just buying, you know, a levered high growth ETF and just kind of leaving it at that in hindsight. But things have clearly changed and COVID, I think, accelerated some of the changes that were already going to happen. And we're living in a different environment. And I think it's going to be a lot more challenging than it's been over the last decade plus. For instance, you know, one big change is, you know, savers, you know, people who have saved money and need to now, you know, retire on that money. They haven't really had a lot of options because there's not been a lot of yield in the market because interest rates have been so low. Well, for the first time in, you know, 15 years, we actually have, you know, I was just recommending to somebody 2 to 3 year treasuries are yielding 4% plus. That's actually not unattractive for the risk profile. So it's a really interesting time in the markets, which is why I think what we're doing at Centerfin makes sense, because we do come at it from you know, a little bit of a contrarian approach, but also a fairly common sense and straightforward approach in terms of explaining what's going on and why we're positioning the way we are and why we're doing what we're doing.
Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, it's fascinating. I think one of the things I sometimes think about is all of the fintech innovations that we've seen over the last, call it decade, you know, maybe kind of starting with SoFi's emergence onto the stage, and then all of the financial innovation that we've seen since SoFi, which I think SoFi, I first learned about SoFi around 2012. And I start to think about, well, what are the next waves of innovation in financial services or within fintech? If you were to have a crystal ball, what would you see as kind of being, you know, kind of this next stage of innovation in fintech that we're going to be seeing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the one technology that I'm sure you're aware of and paying attention to and lots of people are paying attention to is really the use of blockchain technology. And I think that is, you know, put aside crypto, broadly speaking, but just this concept of blockchain technology, I think makes a ton of sense in financial services. And I think it has the ability to potentially streamline, you know, create more efficiencies, again, deliver more value to the end user, the client, with time. I think it's still very early. As I've said to friends and family, you know, going back to 2017, 2018, I think it's something that makes sense. You should have exposure to it. You should size it appropriately from a risk management perspective. You know, I respect people that kind of jumped in with both feet and, you know, some of them have done really well, some not so well, but I think, you know, for most people, it should be a small allocation in client portfolios in terms of just getting exposure to it. But I think from an operating perspective, I think, you know, aware and involved in certain other things where the technology itself, I think, has the ability to actually create a lot of value. And you know, to the point that we were talking about earlier with the incumbents not being able to really innovate, just given the nature of their institutions and just kind of the history of their institutions. I think, you know, blockchain technology has the ability to really turn a lot of things on its head. And I'm really interested, fascinated, following very closely some of the developments that space is making in financial services.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say that the philosophy behind blockchain is obviously intellectually very compelling, and the technology is remarkable. I think what's been challenging is that sometimes it's felt like a bit of a Newton moment. You know, the use cases aren't quite there. The market, perhaps, many of the markets aren't necessarily ready to make that transition. I think about it in the context of Finalis and our investment banking customers. I can't imagine an expression that would alienate our client base faster than to say that Finalis was going to be fully on blockchain. today. Yeah, there is this element of not leaning in too far ahead of your skis, depending on who your constituencies are within financial services. And I'd be curious to know, you know, the extent to which there is a blockchain strategy within CenterFin, or if it's on the roadmap, kind of how you see it playing into that strategy in the long term.
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I would say just to respond to your point about Finalis, I would say one of the things I've thought about as it relates to just banking in general, right? There is an ability to not, you know, fully kind of jump in to kind of make it all on the blockchain, but there is an ability to record transactions on a blockchain as part of the broader business, right? And so the way I kind of think about what we're doing and where, you know, you might want to, you know, automate a lot of the stuff that goes on that typically is not automated, but you might still want to have, you know, a person that's available to talk to the client if the client wants to talk to a person. That automation, you know, it can be blockchain, it doesn't have to be blockchain, but I think that there's a lot of merit to certain transaction-based businesses where blockchain makes sense because it's really good at, you know, it's really good at transactions basically, and recording transactions and keeping track of those transactions. And the way I've kind of described it actually as it relates to the more transactional banking businesses, you know, instead of, you know, having PDF versions of subdocs for a private placement, you know, you can record a lot of the elements of a transaction in a smart contract on a blockchain. And it just kind of replaces some of that legal paperwork, so to speak. As it pertains to CenterFin, I would say our approach has been to basically create a little bit of exposure for client portfolios to the technology, effectively to the space. And to my point earlier, that's been my personal approach. I've recommended it to friends and family for 5 or 6 years at this point, and that's what we're doing for clients. Because I do think that there are some scenarios where that is the, you know, that's really, you know, kind of future leader of, leadership of the, maybe even the stock market in general, right? If you look at, we talk about this internally a lot. If you look at kind of companies that led the stock market over long periods of time, over decades, you know, the types of companies change depending on the environment we're in, you know, so for a long time it was oil and gas companies, and then, you know, since the 2000s, it's been technology companies. You know, we think 2020 going forward could be financial technology companies, right? As the leadership. And so, from an investment perspective, you know, we want to have exposure to that. I think that there is a lot of things you could do with blockchain to streamline the operations of a traditional investment business, you know, like wealth management. But I think we're not, you know, there's been some announcements recently with firms putting certain funds on a blockchain, which I think are interesting developments, but I think it's still very early.
Thanks so much for sharing that. I'm curious, if we were to go back in time and kind of, you know, step into your shoes a little bit when you were at Golub thinking about maybe taking the leap and launching your own boutique advisory firm, you know, tell me a little bit about what surprised you the most about launching your own boutique and kind of what your lessons were from that experience. You know, many of our listeners are boutique investment bankers, placement agents, and independent deal makers. So be very curious to hear kind of your insights and your own learned experience from taking that leap.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I'd say a couple things. One is, and this was also true when I left Goldman to join a client, right? You almost always underestimate how much of the connectivity or network you have is really tied to the firm, the bigger firm that you're with, right? So when I was at Goldman, you know, the joke was always, you know, a lot more people return your call than if you leave Goldman and all of a sudden you're, you know, at a smaller place. Same thing, you know, from when you're at Golub Capital and then you start your own thing, and you know, the same dynamic exists. It's kind of interesting because you know, having gone through it once, it was something to be expected going through it a second time. I'd say the journey to kind of become a solopreneur at that point, was not one that I took lightly. It was a lot of consultation with other people that had a lot more experience than I had to help guide my decision making. I'd say I still probably underestimated just being in my model, being a solopreneur, kind of, you know, working for myself. I really underestimated, I think, the isolation, for lack of a better term, that you kind of experience, which is where, you know, it's basically you. And oftentimes there's not a, you know, another person to commiserate with or celebrate with, depending on what's happening. And so that's something that took some adjusting to. And really, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's a very different proposition that I don't think is for everybody, but I think people that decide to strike out on their own, have a hunch that this is something that they can do and can be successful at. And so I think it's not a decision to make lightly. I think it's a decision that needs to be, you know, well aligned with, where you are kind of personally and professionally, obviously. And, but it's, you know, I think for some people, it's a great, great decision.
I love the point that you mentioned at the top of your response with respect to the fact that many times folks tend to overestimate the value of the large boutique or the bulge where they're currently sitting as it relates to getting calls back or, you know, generating new business. Would love to dive a little bit deeper on that point. A, what is it that informs that perspective? But B, why in your view is that perspective wrong?
So I think, well, I should say it's not, I wouldn't say it's overestimating it. I would say, I think the benefit of being part of a bigger shop is real. I would say, you know, there is value there. And I'd say that, you know, there are people that you talk to when you're sitting at Goldman Sachs or Golub Capital or, you know, whatever big place you're sitting at that are talking to you because you're at that place, right? And I think a lot of people fool themselves actually to believe that it's because of you. And sometimes it is. But a lot of people, I think, underestimate how much the organizational connection that is driving that relationship. It really depends on each person and their experience and their types of relationships. But, you know, as you know, it's a relationship type business. And so oftentimes I think people overestimate their relationships. To actually give you a good anecdote, which was very informative for me, when I first set out to build this, much more senior, somebody who I consider a mentor of sorts, person who's been in this business a lot longer than I have, said to me, how many really, really solid institutional investor relationships do you have? And I said to him, you know, sitting down in conversation, I said, oh, hundreds. And he said, no, you don't. And I said, no, I do. I've been doing this for a long time. I have my Rolodex, huge. And he said, no, you don't. He's like, go away, go sit down and think about it. And think about who are the people that you really, really have a good relationship with, where you could call them on their cell phone. They pick up the phone. It doesn't matter what you're calling about. That they'll give you good feedback, that they'll give you color if you need it, all those things that are really good relationships. So I did this exercise, and, you know, I came up with a group of, you know, I think it was like 20 plus or minus, you know, people. So it's a much smaller, but that's valuable and it's important. But it's a much smaller, I think, group of people than most in our seat really believe till they actually go through that exercise.
No, really interesting insights there. And then with respect to the point that you mentioned about loneliness or about the fact that, you know, there's no one to commiserate with or celebrate successes with, you know, tell me a little bit about how you overcame that and what opportunities exist for a platform like Finalis to facilitate that.
Yeah, it's a good question. So for me, it was just, you know, it's just kind of staying active and having a good support network. And a lot of it is, you know, I'm very fortunate, you know, my former colleagues from Goldman Sachs, from when I was kind of more junior in my career, are almost all gone from Goldman Sachs at this point. But we're all pretty close still. And so we can kind of lean on each other when we need to. And that's really, really valuable. You know, and also obviously my network that I've developed since leaving has been super supportive and kind of leaning on them and not being afraid to lean on them and being real with people, right? I think that's, again, something that, that is not very common in this industry. I'd say one of the things that I think, you guys do well at Finalis and, you know, people could benefit from is really just having, the ability to interact with other like-minded, business people, right? I think that's super helpful. I think that, you know, for me, I found, you know, even as simple as getting advice on, you know, engagement letters and how to structure a certain deal and what the right fee structure is super valuable, right? Because again, when you're by yourself, you're in a vacuum. And then when all of a sudden you have access to other individuals that are, you know, more experienced, you know, and have done different things than you, it's really, really helpful and very valuable. So that's, I think, a huge value add for what you guys do.
Thanks for those insights, Kyrol. Just last question. Was curious if you could just share some thoughts with respect to what's coming down the pike for Centerfin over the coming year.
Yeah, happy to. So we're in the process of launching our first proprietary fund, and that will provide some very interesting, unique alternative investment exposure for our clients. So that's coming down the pike, and that's pretty exciting. And that's actually something that's like part and parcel to, you know, one, and it took a little while to like figure out how to properly structure it, which is why it's just getting going now. But that's something that I'm very excited about and very passionate about. The other thing that we were not, I mean, I think this was in my mind in the pipeline, but much farther down, the timeline, but we've just been kind of organically approached by other wealth managers, more traditional wealth managers, smaller boutique practices where, they look to do everything, outsource everything except for managing the relationship of the client. And the interesting thing about that is I was not aware that was even something that was done until we actually started talking to people. But we've had, kind of reverse inquiry, you know, organically come about where, you know, we're having very serious conversations now where, you know, can we, handle the investment management piece of what a financial advisory practice does on top of, you know, we've already built out the tech stack and the custodian and all that stuff is done, right? And have, you know, the advisor, handle the relationship and figure out economics that make sense for both. And I think that that's actually very, very promising. And that's something that I think you'll hear about from us, in the near term.
Well, Kyrol, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on the Pencils Down podcast. Very much looking forward to tracking your and Centerfin's continued success here in the space and to speaking with you again very soon.
Thank you so much for having me and congrats on your success. And I look forward to staying in touch with you as well.
Speak soon. Finalis is a broker-dealer platform with everything that M&A advisors, investment bankers, and placement agents need to succeed. We deliver a broker-in-a-box regulatory affiliation solution, replete with tech-enabled compliance, research and analytics, deal lifecycle management tools, and a first-of-its-kind deal marketplace. Learn more at www.finalis.com. You've been listening to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. Keep connected with us by subscribing to the show on your favorite podcast player. If you like what you've heard, please rate the show. That helps us keep covering the latest in the private securities brokerage landscape. Thanks for listening. Until next time.